to the Higher Training Podcast. On this episode, I am joined by Chris Brennan. Now, Chris is the creative director at Zoma Branding, which is a marketing agency. He's also the owner of Coffee and Kimura's, which is it's just jiu-jitsu at the moment that you have the
jiu-jitsu and MMA fightwear brand is the way I describe it. Yeah,
there we go. Perfect. Entrepreneur. He is doing the YouTube buzz now as well. Christopher Brennan. The brand builder. I just wanted to say Christopher Brennan.
Sound like my mum. She only says that when I'm in trouble.
Yeah, well, you are in trouble. We're here.
I'm in trouble now, yeah.
We're here to put you through today. But cheers for agreeing to do this, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Chris is a mate of mine, so if I rip into him, don't think that he's going to get angry because he's well used to me ripping into him at this stage and vice versa. We are also teammates at Team Torres. Chris is a fellow jiu-jitsu enthusiast, blue belt, same as myself.
Fellow blue belts now
for a while anyway.
The man's upgraded.
Yeah, and Chris competes a good bit. He also, I was coaching Christopher for a good wee while now, one to one, and he also is a member of the Jiu Jitsu Giant Care membership program. So myself and Chris, we'd be in cahoots and a fair few different things, whether it's baiting each other jiu jitsu or me getting them to do Zercher squats. We'll talk about all of that, but the main reason why I wanted to chat to you, mostly business side of things, marketing side of things, an area where I am clearly, if you've seen any of my Instagram stuff, I'm pretty poor at it. So I'm here to learn a few things off you and have a wee chat about it. Now, I'm not going to put you under the bus too much, but I think it'd be good for anyone who hasn't heard of Christopher before to kind of go back to what your initial kind of branch into the whole marketing crack was. And I'm going to assume that you got into the Zoma crack before you started the Coffee and Kimura's, or which came first?
No, it was actually the other way around. I did engineering in college. It's what I always wanted to do. I was working in it for a couple of years in Dublin. Hated driving up and down to Dublin every day, obviously. And I started to see, at the time I was into bodybuilding and had seen guys like at the time Rob Lipsett was kind of just starting, and I saw this avenue of like online making money, online career of some sort, and I thought, all right, let's try this. So I tried doing kind of a fitness thing, did one of those shitty level 3 whatever PT courses to get into that, and after a while I think what put me towards clothing and marketing was I got t-shirts done for that, and I realized that process of sourcing products and kind of just working on marketing and brand building was way more enjoyable to me than training people. So that's why I kind of went that direction, and along with my kind of engineering experience of sourcing products or sourcing tooling from Asia, I used kind of different aspects of that to start getting into looking at clothing brands, and then got into jiu-jitsu then at the same time as an avenue for more cardio, an outlet for cardio instead of just going on treadmills, because I was like bodybuilding end of, I just didn't want to be walking on a treadmill all day. So that's why I started doing jiu-jitsu, and then got obsessed with jiu-jitsu, coffee and product sourcing at the same time, so decided to start Coffee and Kimura's, which was crazy as a zero stripe white belt. Didn't even tell people what I was doing. A couple of years of that alongside a couple of other businesses, I was just trying to make anything work that I could do my own thing really. And then COVID, I was doing a lot of like design and brand work alongside a friend of mine, David, who was doing a lot of website work, and another friend of ours, Richie, was doing a lot of content, photo and video work. And then with COVID, everyone had to go online, and all three of us, business kind of went through the roof. So we just said, let's make one kind of big agency out of this. And that's where Zoma came from. So we started that in February 2021. Nearly 3 years ago now, and it's going well, really well. Really enjoyable. Every day is different. We have clients in every sort of industry, so keeps things fresh, and it's a complete change to what I was doing before, which is exactly what I wanted really when I was in engineering. I was just getting sick of it. I just wanted something that was going to be fresh every day and not kind of doing the same thing on repeat over and over again. So I really, to be honest, I just fell into it in a way. It's the combination of having a scatterbrain and an agency and a clothing brand all kind of going on at the same time, and then decided to this year. I kind of wish, I don't really regret anything ever. I try and make a point of not regretting things, but I wish I had been recording footage of myself while I was building Coffee and Kamara's, especially at the start. To be able to look back on that would have been really cool, because I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I had absolutely no idea. So I was just winging it. So to be able to have footage of that would have been great. So I kept saying, oh, I'm going to start some sort of a YouTube or something. Then earlier this year, I just said, right, let's go for it. I had some footage that I had been recording. I'd recorded an intro video probably 7 or 8 times and just never put them out. And then just did one earlier this year, Saturday morning, recorded it and put it up. Or I think recorded it on the Friday and put it up on the Saturday, something like that. And then just kept going every week. I'm doing a video now. And yeah, over 6 months of doing it. And I don't really have an end goal in mind. I think it's just to have some sort of a record of what I'm doing at the minute, because I have a terrible memory as well. So for me to be able to look back on it in 30 or 40 years would be really cool, and pass it on to kids and grandkids so they can see what I did. I think it'd be really cool to be able to, I wish I was able to speak to my granddad again and get some stories from when he was younger. So it'll be something that future generations be able to look back and see what I was doing. So that's kind of the point of that.
Even on that point there, like, we fucking do so much that we forget about, like, and yeah, you can journal and you can do all of that, but like the old video evidence is a lot easier to kind of do than fucking write everything down. His journals can be lost. Fucking
journals are gonna get lost. I did a bit of journaling and I find it good, but to go back, you're not really gonna go back and read all this, whereas you can flick back through videos a lot easier. And yeah, I think it's a cool medium as well, and I rather speak in the camera rather than writing down, because my handwriting's so bad that firstly I can't read it when I go to read it back, but secondly, while I'm writing it, there's thoughts going through my head that by the time I get to finishing one thought, I've forgotten what I was going to write next. So yeah, rather just spouting on camera, really.
100%. You actually, that one thing you said there about fucking wish you could talk to your granddad again, I actually took a notion there, like, fucking, it's like I want to start doing, going around and asking my aunties and uncles and people who knew me out by about, like, questions and stuff about them, and like, oh, like, what's your first and last memory you have the old boy, or the first memory you have, and like find out a little bit more about them and capture some of those conversations, because, you know, people don't conversate as much as they used to, especially our generation.
Yeah.
We're fucking stuck into the old phone and the old content, and we don't talk as much. And plus, look, when people are gone, the stories is gone, you know, so it's good to hold things, you know, in time with videos.
Irish culture is such an oral culture as well. There's so many stories that I'm sure have been tweaked and Chinese whispers in a way coming down through hundreds of years, but there's a lot of old Irish mythology things that would have just been passed as oral tradition. And yeah, it's trying to record all that now that it's so easy to record everything, so why wouldn't we?
Yeah, when the apocalypse eventually happens and there's no more electricity, somebody will find a few discs of Christopher's YouTube series, and they'll learn how to build humanity again and build brands again.
When the aliens come down and invade us after we're gone, they'll find all my footage.
Yeah.
Wonder what was up with this mad fella.
Them being led by Eddie Bravo and his disciples.
Flat Earth King.
So you started Coffee and Kamara's, like, as a white belt, which is very, very commendable, because I personally would probably have struggled to do both things at the same time. Make a jiu-jitsu brand for people who do jiu-jitsu and actually also learn how to do jiu-jitsu. My brain does not have the ability to do those two things at the same time.
Commendable is one word for it. Mental is another word for it, to be honest. When I think back on it, like, I was getting samples from Asia of rash guards and stuff before I'd ever bought a rash guard. Yeah. So I didn't know what a rash guard was.
Oh, fucking bastard.
I was just buying samples and, like, playing samples, and then I come up with a logo and I asked the factory, I'll throw this on it, will you? Then send it back to me. And I was wearing them under the gi at training and not telling anyone, just, it was just a rash guard to other people that weren't paying attention to it. So I was doing that for probably a year before I even started the brand. And yeah, even then, after I started, I felt like a fraud in a way. Starting a brand in something that I'd, like, the sport, something that takes years to master, and even at that you could spend years at it and never master it, and I'm only at it a couple of months and I'm doing this brand. I was like, this is a bit weird and suspicious. But when I got my blue belt, I felt a little bit more justified that, all right, you're not just a white belt anymore. No offense to white belts or anything like that, but I felt like, all right.
All offense to white belts.
I white belt rash guard still there, so if you just want to get one.
Actually, no, white belts are signed by the rash guard.
But yeah, it was like a justification almost that, all right, I actually do know something about jiu-jitsu here. And so it justified me, even though like you don't have to be a black belt to be selling rash guards or any sort of merch or anything like that. If you know how to develop product and source product and you know what good quality materials are and good branding is, there's no reason that someone who doesn't even do jiu-jitsu at all could do a jiu-jitsu brand. So yeah, why not just go for it?
Yeah, well, it's fucking, it's great. I love going around the competitions. I compete the odd time, same as yourself, and I love fucking going around, and you just be walking around, you just see coffee and kimuras, like just either on the mats or people walking around, and you're like, they're not even from our gym. Like, different. Obviously, you see a few people from the gym. Well, loads of people from the gym wearing it, which is class. But whenever you see people that you don't know where, does it give you a wee like fucking buzz inside?
Honestly, it's incredible. Like, it's so cool walking around competitions and seeing people. Like, when you think about training, whatever about training, but if you're going to a competition, I know I do anyway, I'll look in the drawer and be like, right, what's the nicest rash guard I have? What's the best one? What do I trust most to not rip or whatever? And to see people wearing Coffee and Kimura's gear in competition is like, that's the ultimate, not justification, what's the word? That's the ultimate compliment, I suppose, to the product and to the brand, which is so satisfying. I think it's a little bit distracting though when I'm competing and I'm walking around and I'm seeing all the Coffee and Kimura's gear and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And I'm trying to get in the zone to compete and I'm getting distracted by all of this. So there's my excuse for my performance in the last couple of competitions.
Well, we'll chat about jiu-jitsu competitions and the likes and training a wee bit more later on. But I seen that you had, well, there was a few boys at the Combat Jiu-Jitsu Championships wearing the old Coffee and Kimuras. It's fucking fairly spreading beyond just the local Irish competitions.
Yeah, I have a couple of guys in the US, Marcelo Cohen and Austin Daffron, who are essentially professional Jiu-Jitsu athletes, competitors. Both very successful. Both have competed on Combat Jiu-Jitsu multiple times. Austin's transitioning into MMA a little bit now. But yeah, to be honest, I think, well, Marcelo came first. He's done a lot of instructionals around a Kimura. Kimura is like his signature move. And I think he reached out to me very, very early on in the brand. Mm-hmm. And I just sent him a load of gear pretty much. And we've kind of been working together since, to a certain extent. And then similar thing with Austin. He was sponsored by a couple of coffee shops and reached out and thought the brand aligned really well. He actually came over here last year and we did a few days kind of turn around training in different gyms and did a photo shoot with him as well up in Belfast. So yeah, it's really cool to be speaking and working kind of alongside someone for a couple of years but never actually meet them. It was cool to sit down with him in person. We actually did a podcast while he was here, but it was it was a bit chaotic, but it was, yeah, it's really cool to be kind of interacting and dealing with athletes on a high level. And yeah, some MMA athletes as well. We've Decky McLean from Nuri, who trains with us as well. Been sponsoring him for the last few years. We also sponsor his show that he runs, Euro Fighting Championships, which is actually on tomorrow. I don't know when this podcast is going out, but we're recording it the day before Euro 9, which we'll be at. And I'll have a stand at it as well. So it's cool that as well, getting in front of people with a stand at a show like that, because it's primarily it's a D2C brand. It's an e-commerce brand that's primarily online. We don't have a physical presence. So to be able to get out at events in front of people as well and see people saying, oh yeah, I have this and have that, I'll get that, go along with it. Or even just chatting to people about jiu-jitsu, about MMA, about training. Yeah, it's really cool to be involved in it, I suppose. That was kind of the half of the reason why I started the brand. Was I got obsessed with jiu-jitsu very quickly when I started. And I said, yeah, this is a scene that I want to be involved in, which is also why I started the brand too. So yeah, it's just trying to build up the brand as I can and get to a point where I'm a mainstay and trying to make a full-time living out of jiu-jitsu, essentially. That's not the kind of traditional route of opening a gym or teaching classes or seminars.
Yeah, well, we'll not rule that out indefinitely.
No,
we're not ruling it, but eventually, hopefully, we'll be seeing Coffee and Kimuras alongside Scramble at the Irish Open if they're ever allow more than one vendor at any tournament, even though they have an absolutely huge space there, they have millions of vendors up. But anyway, another thing.
Don't get me started. I'm not doing that on Mike.
Well, it's okay. I have no. I'm never gonna have a
nothing against Ramble or a great brand.
Yeah. Good crack. I'm loads of your keys. Good rash guards. Up coffee and Kamara. You mentioned like when you see all these people wearing your stuff that it kind of distracts you from your own when you're competing. Mm-hmm. And we'll chat a bit more about competing now. But do you think because you're so involved in combat sports in general jiu-jitsu, between sponsoring different fighting companies, sponsoring athletes, and seeing everybody wearing your gear, do you think it adds a little bit of pressure onto yourself?
I feel like it does. I feel like I'm putting pressure on myself. I'm like, I'm running a brand here, and especially when I'm, now that I'm kind of doing the videos, that I feel like I need to perform well, and when I don't perform well, it reflects badly on my personal brand, on the Coffee and Kamara's as a brand, when it probably doesn't in all reality. Like, it doesn't make a difference. I think if I see someone going out competing, regardless of how they do or what they do in their living, in their day-to-day life, if they're trying to make a living out of jiu-jitsu, if I see someone competing in jiu-jitsu or in MMA especially as well, that you instantly have respect for someone for just putting themselves out there and trying it, because it's not easy. Like, it is tough, and more so from the mental, the psychological side. So it doesn't help that I put that added pressure on myself, but I also have high expectations for myself just in general. Even if I didn't have the brand, I'm just too competitive to... that's kind of why I got away from bodybuilding. I was on the verge of competing in bodybuilding, but it's the subjective aspect of it that I didn't like. I was like, well, it's based on that guy's opinion down there, who's going to win this, versus football is a score, jiu-jitsu is a score, MMA, right, yeah, there's judges' opinion in it too, but you can still just finish them, and if you don't, then it's your fault. So having that definite, he won, he didn't, that's what I kind of rathered. But yeah, the psychological aspect of putting pressure on myself is something that it does hinder me big time. But doing like additional training, obviously we started working together this year in terms of the one-to-one training, it made a big difference to my psychological kind of thought processes going into the competition, because I knew I was physically more prepared versus before. For the last couple of years, I was literally not really doing any extra S&C work, kind of accessory training alongside my jiu-jitsu. I was just training twice a day, most days coming up to competitions, and really burning myself out, to be honest, rather than kind of having a balance of, okay, actually having technical progression alongside like accessory physical progression through like S&C training or...
And yeah. Hard rolls then.
And then just hard rolls, going like an absolute savage on a Sunday evening.
Yeah. We'll definitely hit it up tomorrow, 100%.
It'll be the Sunday evening open mat.
Oh. I feel a little bit what you're on about with the pressure, in the sense that I train boys that compete, and therefore I feel like I have a little bit of pressure on me to do well. I'm not as involved in jiu-jitsu as a whole as you are, but I train a good few athletes in general. I train a good few jiu-jitsu heads, and I felt that pressure when I went back into that first competition after tearing the Achilles. The combination, obviously, coming back from injury and fucking the pressure of that. But
I think, though, like, if I look at, let's say, Andrew McGahan is essentially my head coach in a way. Obviously, he's not exactly the head coach, but
he would hate you saying that.
Yeah,
coach.
That's Coach McGahan, Oost professor. Where he competes and obviously doesn't always go his way, but it's leading by example in a way, especially as a black belt, that he's consistently competing all the time. And it's a similar thing where if you're, from your perspective, that you're coaching or doing programs and helping people who are looking towards competing in jiu-jitsu, that if you can compete yourself, then from their point of view, let's say from my point of view, looking at you, that I know that you know the feeling of competing, if that makes sense. So then you're able to kind of tailor the physical training, the accessory training to go along with jiu-jitsu that's going to suit that. that. And then there's obviously, you get into the psychological aspect as well, and you have some really good like insights and advice as well, so that's always really helpful. But that comes from a place of experience, of you've been there, you've done it, you do it on a regular basis, well, when you're not injured. And yeah, but it's, you have more faith and trust in your coach, whether that's your jiu-jitsu coach or your strength and conditioning coach, whatever, that because they do it on a regular basis, and they know what it feels like, they know what the training has to be coming up to it, they know what it feels like on the week of a competition. Or
it's not just a theoretical fucking thing, it's like a, like you've had salt in the game, you've fucking experienced it. Like, I, you know what it's been like to cut massive amounts of weights consistently and then try and perform at any sort of a level, and I've fucking overdone it in terms of cutting weight. I not miss weight, but I fucking had to cut 4 or 5 kilos in a day or two, you know, and that sort of crap. I've learned the lessons a little bit, like, so
yeah.
I do understand that, but fucking getting a better grasp of the pressure, probably something both of us probably could use a wee bit better at.
I think that just comes with experience as well, though, and that's why I tried to compete a lot this year. I was looking at my stats recently, and my stats at blue belt, I have a record of every match and how it finished, and I have like percentages of my wins and losses and subs and whatever, and really detailed breakdown that I can look back on and see, and they're dreadful stats, to be honest. I wouldn't even put them out anywhere because they're embarrassing, but it's, I just look at it and I go, you're building up experience. I'm not going to care about what my blue belt results were in 10 years time when I'm hopefully a black belt or close to it, that the blue belt results aren't going to matter, but the experience of competing while I'm able to do it as well, regardless of what the result is, just being able to compete, and the gratitude aspect of, like, last year I had quite a severe injury with a trapped nerve in my neck where I could barely walk for a month. I couldn't drive a car. I was crippled essentially, just from drilling reverse half guard, and it that kind of period of not being able to train for, I think I didn't train for like 3 months at all, anything, and it was in that kind of period where I went, right, when you get back and you're able to train again, assuming that, I wasn't sure if I was ever going to be able to train again at the time, but when I got back I was like, right, okay, when you get back here, you're going to enjoy it, you're going to compete as much as you can, and you're just going to enjoy the competitions. Now, that's not to say when the performances don't go well, I'm not sour that evening, but then it...
Or for a few days after.
Or for a week or two after. But it's the, just the gratitude aspect of knowing, right, you're able to compete, you're fit to compete, you're physically able and in a position to be able to do this, and then, yeah, in 10 years' time, if I'm still able to, great. If not, I'll be able to look back in the days and say, you give it a go.
100%. I think you have to get them fucking shitty moments of nearly thinking that something's going to be taken away from you to really appreciate it. But yourself as a strap nerve, myself, to Achilles, I had no fear that I'd be able to do jiu-jitsu again. I knew I would. It's more so me running related exercises that I'd be more worried about, and the jumping and all. But it does make you feel a bit more appreciative for it. And then in that same front, then you don't fucking, you're less likely to miss it. You know, you're less likely to miss your Sunday night open mat now because, you know, there was a time when you thought, like, fuck, I might be able to do this anymore.
I'd say easily once a week. Planning on going to training, then it gets to that evening, I've had a long day or whatever, I'm just like, oh, I just couldn't be arsed. I'm not bothered. And then I kind of catch myself saying that and go, if you had said when that, during that couple of month period last year, that you just weren't arsed going training, I'd have slapped myself. So that's why I just kind of catch myself in the middle of that, saying that, and get up, throw my gear on and go out. And by the time you're done, that there's nothing like the post-training endorphins from jiu-jitsu. I actually don't know how to describe it to people who haven't trained jiu-jitsu. There's nothing like it. I don't know what it is. If it's the, well, like, the way I describe it to people is that the definition of meditation is being present and in the moment, and you cannot be more present than in the moment than when someone's literally trying to choke you or rip a limb off. So meditation is such a trending topic that it doesn't necessarily have to be sitting cross-legged with the own fingers and staring at the sun or whatever,
bowls and stuff.
Yeah, even though, yeah, but it's like, it is really it's the meditation aspect of it, and that endorphin rush that you get after training is insane.
I think as well, you know, I like learning, and
constant progression.
Yeah, constant. Like when I played the video games, I used to be a fiend for video games growing up, and the video games I really enjoyed were always ones where you could see progression, whether it's like your character levels up or you have new abilities unlocked or you have new like ranks. Like I didn't mind FIFA. I was more of a fucking Madden. I used to play Madden and got addicted to the NCAA college football. And on that, you only have lads for 4 years because they're in college. And, well, some of them stay on 5 years, whatever. There's progressions from year to year. And that, like, even just like that part of the game where you finish your season, whenever, however you do. But in between seasons where your players progress, that always is like the biggest buzz to me. And I think it's the same thing with Jiu-Jitsu, where it's like, you might be feeling like, oh, fuck, I'm not getting any better, blah, blah. You have weeks and weeks where you're training, you're working on stuff. Maybe you're not even using the moves that you've been taught in the last few weeks or whatever. Then all of a sudden, some one particular technique or concept sticks, and then you start using it in loads of roles, and you can see like, well, actually, no, I've actually developed a good bit. Or somebody who hasn't been in a while comes in, and you can feel like, fuck, and that in these positions here, I'm a lot better than I was before. That those little buzzes, they're a lot more pronounced in jiu-jitsu, I think, than in other sports. Like, you could play Gaelic football your whole life but never get any better.
That's the thing I found about... I played pretty much every sport growing up. I played Gaelic, soccer, rugby, everything. But they're all team sports, essentially. And it got to a point... It was only really when I started doing jiu-jitsu that I realised what I liked and didn't like about football was... What I liked as a nippy little cornerback in Gaelic and annoying little fucker was... The one-on-one aspect of it's me and our best corner forward. Even if we lost, but I did okay, I didn't feel too bad. But if we won, but the fella I was marking scored 1-4, I'd be ripping. So it's like, all right, that's the one-to-one aspect that I prefer, yeah. Clearly. But then it's the progression aspect of every year you're essentially doing the same thing over and over again. Like, whatever, you can get better, but you'll go up and down. Versus jiu-jitsu is... You're going to have lulls and you're going to have, say, days and weeks where you feel like you've gone backwards or you feel like you've basically starting from scratch again, but you are improving all the time. And it's one of those things that jiu-jitsu is just never ending. I know it's cliche, but it literally is never ending. So you're always in a state of progression, and that's what's enjoyable about it. Definitely.
It's never ending, especially because everyone's going to be in TRT by the time they turn 50.
I'll be in TRT long before I'm 50.
Yeah, well, we can't sit on the cameras.
Oh yeah, are they still rolling?
get Craig Jones for a link up. Only in Texas though.
Yeah, we'll fly to Panama and get some of the good shit.
Yeah, when are you doing the collab with Craig Jones, cocaine and Camaras?
That's a bit of me, yeah.
Oh fuck. With the training side of things, you said like you weren't doing much S&C accessory stuff outside of jiu-jitsu. While we're on the topic, before I forget it, we'll run through the questions about the training. But in general, what was missing that the extra bit of S&C stuff kind of provided, or that maybe you weren't doing before? Because I know you were doing bits of like training in, but like,
yeah, I was doing a little bit. Like I might have been doing, say, a session every week or 2 weeks. It was kind of like, what would you call it, like functional training, maybe something like that, but it was like quick sessions, like 25-30 minutes, just fatigued muscles in every aspect. And like it was good, yeah, a bit of lifting, bit of what's it called, bike, assault bike stuff, things like that. I hate that assault bike, but anyway, probably shouldn't have told you that, you'll start programming it in there. But it, yeah, I was doing a little bit. But when I started working with you and got that program, and it was tailored specifically to my deficiencies, let's say, around injuries that I've had in the past and injuries that I deal with consistently and will always deal with just inherently from surgeries and stuff like that, that working around that and building up confidence in my shoulder specifically, that I struggle with a lot because of multiple surgeries on it, that building up the confidence that it can do certain movements that I didn't think it could have done. I had just written off things like the skin the cats. I was like, oh, that looks like a cool exercise, but my shoulder just will not be able to do that. Whereas now I absolutely love it. And yeah, it was that confidence in my body, in particular joints that are an issue for me. And yeah, being able to manage that in training, as well as, I suppose, being feeling solid in certain positions where I might have, let's say, if I'm in someone's guard or someone, I would have always played a bottom game, playing guard, pulling guard, and never really kind of just wrote off like pass, and I was like, oh no, that's not for me, I'm too small or whatever, and I'm just going to play guard, I'd rather play in guard. But the combination of trying to focus a little bit more on developing my passing game, my top game, and combining that with the accessory work that I was doing through your program, I felt a lot more solid, a lot stronger. And a lot of people are saying it to me in the gym as well, that Jesus, your top pressure's got so much better. And I think it wasn't just a combination, it wasn't just technique, it was definitely a combination of that and the kind of accessory work, of, yeah, just putting confidence back into my body. And the only downside of it was that my gi pants got very tight because my quads were absolutely humongous with all them Zertra squats.
And the arse of your shorts ripped as well.
Forgot about that, actually, yeah. So one set, one rep, two reps into Zertra squats and blew the arse out of my favourite pair of shorts. I was devastated.
If that's not social proof, I don't know what is.
Some hoop. But yeah, it's the Zertra squats particularly, I was like, what are these mad exercises you're getting me doing? But those Zertra squats, I love them. I way rather them than any other variation of squat now. I struggle a back squat because I just can't really hold on to the bar because I can't get my left shoulder to turn enough to hang on to it. But adding in the Zertra squats was, yeah, really, really big fan of that exercise. And doing different exercises like that where it's challenging the body in different ways that it wouldn't have been challenged before was, yeah, it was an enjoyable kind of part of training too. And got me away from training just doing jiu-jitsu every day or twice a day all week. I was swapping it out then of doing every second day of jiu-jitsu one day, gym the next day, and yeah, enjoying that change of routine as well, which kept things fresh. And I think I probably was overtrained beforehand in terms of jiu-jitsu, that if that's all you're doing, fair enough, it works differently for some people. Some people would like to train jiu-jitsu three times a day and they'll improve at a rapid rate, and fair play, but I don't think that style of training is suited to me. So I think doing that, getting away from it for a while, or getting away from it, let's say, every second day and then coming back to it, definitely was helping my progression as well.
And you got them hops back as well, and you even managed a sneaky wee 5K as well, not too bad time.
I don't know, it's like a mad notion to do a 5K one day, but whatever, yeah. I hate running, but we'll go with it.
Yeah. I think, like, for people who are listening to this, the lesson to take away from that is, like, I think a lot of people train just for the output, you know, I mean, with the gym stuff, you know, they train just to, you know, I'm going to get my bench numbers higher, or I'm going to put on muscle or anything like that. They don't train in a way to open up new possibilities for movement or to improve the confidence or of a certain body part or positions, like, because, well, I don't know, it's just, that's just not what people put out there in terms of, you know, regular fitness content and training content. Is like, you can use training as a vehicle to improve your confidence in any part of your body, in any position that your body can get in. You know, you can expose it to different varieties and loads and speeds and shit to improve the confidence, and that's kind of what we did a little bit with the shoulder. And like if it was somebody who had broke the wrist, it would make a bit more sense to, like, we're gonna expose it to all the positions that you're a little bit afraid of and you feel uncomfortable in. But then when we step outside of an injury realm, we don't think of it in the same way. Like, there's positions that people get put in jiu-jitsu that they physically feel extremely uncomfortable in, they just can't get into, but yet they don't try and get into those positions in the gym basis where it's more controlled. There's not somebody trying to choke you or bend your wrist backwards while you're in that position. Yeah. You know,
especially if you're recovering from an injury, it's going to speed up the rehab process and speed up your return to sport if that's your kind of end goal. Like, I wish I had have done something like that program after I got my last shoulder surgery, because it would have speeded up my return, it speeded up my confidence in the joint, and which would have probably, obviously I can't say now, but it probably would have sped up my progression in jiu-jitsu in general as well, because I wouldn't have been kind of holding back and trying to manage this rickety old joint. But I think
not so rickety anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. Solid now. But I think what you're saying there about like exposing your body to different movements and stuff. Like, I know how to construct a gym program from like doing a PT course and doing years of like bodybuilding style training. But when I was going through the program that you were giving me, I didn't see where the link was in different exercises. I was looking at like the structure of the program going, this is not, I don't mean strange, but this is very, very different to what I'm used to. And it's just a different style of training, where like bodybuilding style of training is fairly rigid and like you just lift to get massive essentially. So there's nothing too like exciting about it. I did love it when I was doing it at the time, but getting into a different realm of training was very, very interesting, and seeing a different application of what you can do with different movements, and instead of just throwing a bar and a bench and lifting up and down a few times or doing a few squats with a bar on your back, to like even just the variation of putting the bar in between the crook of your elbow rather than putting on your back makes such a big difference, and it makes it really enjoyable then. And it's something different that you really need to be highly educated in that field to be able to construct a program like that versus just a push-pull leg split or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, you can definitely apply certain aspects of it, you know, even if people are like following certain people to do put up, you know, more flexibility focused stuff or maybe more power or plyometric stuff. You can put together a wee bit, like obviously you're not going at it with the same level of understanding as a coach, but don't be afraid of it. I think people are afraid of experimenting. People don't like being that person in the gym that's doing something weird looking, you know. Yeah. I just think people are a little bit hesitant, but if you're paying a coach for it, they'll do it no bother.
Exactly.
Because they can trust in it. But like, I learned a lot of this stuff. Yeah, I have an understanding of biomechanics, physiology, coaching, how to put a program together. But a lot of it, I'm just going to try this and figure
see what
it out.
Happens.
You know, like I might understand the theory, but theory and then practical uses are not necessarily the same thing. So like a lot of stuff, you just try, you know. And even before I studied, you know, sports science, I would have just tried stuff and, you know, figured out. Like I kind of worked on handstands before I ever studied, you know. I was like, fuck it, I'll look up a few videos and you try something here that works for a little bit, okay, it stops working, find something else, you know. If people were more willing to try shit like that in the gym instead of being like, right, no, I'm just gonna do chest today, you know, I'm just gonna do arms
I think
today.
It's just it's maybe laziness. It's just simple. Like, there's so much, we said we were going to talk a lot about marketing and yeah. Don't talk about jiu-jitsu, but it kind of, when you talk about the fitness industry, there's so much bullshit involved, and especially with social media, and a lot of it is smoke and mirrors type stuff. But then like people will, they'll see workouts being put up, and the only people that are putting up workouts are people who are doing basic, like a 5-day split or a 3-day split or whatever bodybuilding style split, and the training is very simple to put together, and then they put up all these workouts, and then people see them posting about it, the screenshot, like, went to the gym and tried that, instead of going, all right, let's go out of the box here and do something different with my body, try and challenge my body in other ways. And I suppose like that's what bored me a little bit about the bodybuilding style training, was that I was getting massive and looked great and I was shredded and whatever, but I wasn't challenging my body, and that's where the kind of jiu-jitsu aspect come in. But I do think that a part of that, of people not going too far outside their comfort zone, is that firstly they probably don't really, they're not educated on it, they don't realize that there is this other kind of side of training maybe where it's a bit more experimental and just a bit more fun and enjoyable. When you think about kids running around, like the form that they have and the movements that they do, why do we lose that when we grow up and get older? Our bodies stiffen up and they change, they adapt or whatever as you grow up, but it's still capable of doing all these movements that you're able to do as a child, but you just limit yourself because you hear other people say that, oh, as I got older, I got stiff and I can't do this anymore. Sometimes I feel like I'm 31 and I go train and I come home and I'm like, I cannot walk. I wake up the next day and I feel like I'm crippled. And then I go into training that night and Tommy that trains with us, who's, I don't know, 150 years old or whatever age he is, and he's there every day and he trains every day and he trains at full pelt every day. And I'm thinking, there's absolutely no excuse for this, for just taking it easy and doing a simple bit of training. Like,
well, if you don't use it, you lose it, and that's the way the body works. Whether it's a range of motion, whether it's strength, whether it's cardiovascular fitness, whether it's your ability to jump, whether it's a movement skill, whether it's jujitsu. Like, if you don't do jujitsu for a long time, you might think, you know, you can remember stuff quickly, but you lose the speed of breaking grips, you know, knowing what position to go for. You, like, if
that
you don't
muscle memory, you're going to lose that muscle memory, and you're going to have to think and be a lot more cerebral, which once you're having to think about something, you instantly get tired quicker because you're putting way more emphasis rather than just doing it instinctively and naturally.
I suppose we better talk about this market and crack now. Right, we talked about training a good bit. I did want to chat about training and jiu-jitsu anyway, so just came at a different time than I thought it was going to come. But with marketing, who are some people or brands that you really like in terms of how to market themselves and their products?
I think I might be a little bit biased in the way that I'm doing my own kind of personal brand marketing now, of doing the kind of YouTube videos and stuff like that. But I think personal brand is a really, really, I think it's probably the most important, like, aspect, maybe, is that the right word, of marketing at the minute. Of essentially, it comes back to the core tenet of people buy from people, and marketing is essentially, it's obviously not sales, but you are selling something. That's the idea of marketing. So when you talk about, well, the best form of sales is people buy from people, that building a personal brand is the best approach to go with as a marketing channel, let's say. And I think for 2024, from people in the marketing industry that I look up to and that I follow and I keep an eye on, they're all kind of saying a similar thing. So people like Ben Francis from Gymshark, Stephen Bartlett obviously has started to do like behind the scenes stuff. I think that behind the scenes content and getting more of a those personalities out there, even to the level of Elon Musk doing podcasts, and yeah, he might be a lizard or whatever he is, but like, I don't think he's human, but whatever, he's doing an incredible job of having a personal brand. And yeah, it's divisive, and some people love him and a lot of people hate him, but everyone's paying attention to what he's saying. So regardless of what people think about,
because he owns Twitter, man,
that's a fair point. X now,
it's fucking Twitter.
FKA Twitter. It's the point of, well, love them or hate them, people are still paying attention. And anyone that's kind of building a personal brand but having not just a bland personality to it. And look, I'm not saying that my videos are any good or that my personality is any use in building a personal brand or anything like that, but it's just putting yourself out there. And I think the brands that I engage with most are brands where the owner or the kind of head of the brand has a bit of a personality and is putting themselves out there as well. If you think of, let's say, Albino or Preto, I keep an eye on they're a really, really cool jiu-jitsu brand, and I keep an eye on their owner or founder or whatever you call him. I can't think of his name now off the top of my head. It's like RVEG or something on Instagram. He's just seems like a really cool guy, and it comes down to that it's just being a kind of good, solid, honest individual and putting yourself out there. And I think that's the kind of best form of marketing. And then if you apply it to as a coach or as a personal trainer, you're literally selling yourself. You're selling your skills and your knowledge and your ability to help someone get to whatever goal they want to get to. But essentially it comes down to, if they think you're a nice person or you're a good person, you're aligned with their values, then they're more likely to work with you than someone that they don't know but is getting people results. They'll say, I'd rather work with someone that I can actually chat to and have a bit of crack with here, alongside just being given a program to work with.
Mm. Or you can go to Craig Jones, and just be an absolute scumbag.
Or you can do that either,
Rip the piss out of people.
Anything to get attention. Attention is the key, really.
It's capital, isn't it?
Attention's capital, yeah.
I don't think there's any person on the internet Well, if the products weren't, if I didn't have to, order from America, I would probably buy more B-team jiu-jitsu gear. Well, no, probably on par with coffee and kimuras and B-team jiu-jitsu gear. I don't think they do rash guards.
That in there.
They don't do rash guards. They do mostly like t-shirts and I don't know, they do rash guards sometimes. They did that the Chicago Bulls one.
Yeah. That's been pulled now.
It's been pulled, yeah. Well, that's copyright. And
shout out to copyright. Yeah. Shout out to the legal industry.
Bastards. but yeah, there's that side of like marketing as well, where people can be very brass and like brash.
I know what you're trying to say.
You know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to sound smarter than I am. That's why you don't do that.
That's
kid.
A struggle.
Yeah. No, it's not a struggle. It's very easy to try and sound smarter than I am because I'm not that smart. but that side of things, like when you see all the marketing stuff people have, then there's people that kind of go outside of that and like they're just like, they're kind of following a little formula. They're obviously trying to grab people's attention, but in a different way, like we're a bit more outrage and humor. I gravitate to those type of people very much so, rather than, you're more like big company sort of market, and I always like, I don't know, maybe it's
that corporate style it's just very aged and dated now, and it doesn't really work anymore. And you see one thing that really, I haven't seen it happen as much, I think it's moved on to Threads a bit more, is the big brands interacting with each other as if they're like individuals. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, it was Lidl or Aldi, one of them was very heavy on it, and it's like the brands talking to each other on Twitter and stuff like that. And it seemed to have moved over to Threads a little bit. Obviously we can't use that in Ireland, but it's I just hate that aspect of trying to make this corporate advertising personable in a way, instead of just having the people in the business promoting themselves, promoting the business, promoting what they do within the business. I think seeing behind the curtain of, probably if you saw behind the curtain of a lot of big corporations, that completely put you off, so that's probably why they don't do it.
100%.
But it's anyone's that do it, it shows that they're an honest brand and or a business, and I think that it works out better in the long run.
Mm.
You get a way more engaged audience then as well, because they're completely bought into the brand, into what they're buying, into what you're selling, and you get a better kind of community feel out of that, and then you get word of mouth referral marketing, which is the best form of marketing, really.
Mm, absolutely. You can do all your social media and your fucking newsletters and all like that, but word of mouth is always good.
If you're doing a good job, if you're building a good relationship with your customers, or you're, from a coach point of view, if you're getting people the results that they're looking for and people are enjoying the training while they're doing it, versus doing a 12-week shred program and then the rebound in 2 weeks, if you're like getting someone to their goals and they're maintaining it and they're staying there and enjoying their training, then that people are gonna see the change in those people, and word's gonna spread, and then you're essentially marketing yourself just through what you're doing, which is that's the ideal case.
Mm. Now I'm gonna put you in the spot here and get you to critique my apparent marketing strategy,
right?
And tell me some things that I could do better, or that you would maybe do different. Now I'll get Lally to pause the camera if you need to think for a while here, or if it's that glaring.
Yeah, that's put me in the spot there. Like, you should have told me that beforehand. I would have had a list here to slate you.
Just stop saying the word Hallion. Don't say the word Hallion as much.
Not even. I'd double down on that. I'd go even further into that, and I'd say, or I'll pick a term, or pick a phrase or a word that, own that phrase, that's yours. Like, before I started doing the YouTube stuff, I was like, I need some sort of something like that, a wee phrase or something that's mine, essentially. And I went with Hola Que Pasa. I start every clip with Hola Que Pasa, and although in the last couple of weeks I've been like, right, maybe I need to just drop this now, but I'll probably just keep going with it.
Mm.
I did Spanish in school, loved it, got an A in Spanish, maybe even.
Shout out to Mr. McGuinness.
Shout out to McGuinness. Shorten me
better. Oh no, hola to Mr. McGuinness.
Yeah, hola, que pasa. I always love Spanish, and it's something that I've kind of dropped off a little bit, but even though I don't, like, I do a little bit of dip in and out of Duolingo now and again just to keep it kind of fresh in my head. But I went with that as like a, this is a phrase, and it probably annoys people. I don't know, it probably annoys people. That's why my views aren't going up.
Well, I think that as well, with me saying like Hallion, and like get up them stairs. They'd be my two like most repeated.
But like that, yeah, you need to have something that's like part of your personal brand in a way. You need to have a phrase that you stick to. Every big personal brand, they have some sort of a lane or an avenue or something that the people recognize them by. And if that's a phrase, lean into it and stick with that. I wouldn't change that. I wouldn't, because if you get away from, let's say you've been using Hallion as a phrase and get up them stairs for whatever, a couple of years now. If you stop using that, you're going to have to find something else. You do have to have something like that to engage people and have some consistency across your content in a way. Consistency is key. Shout out to Andrew McGann.
Shout out to Breakfast Paps.
But yeah, so then if you drop, let's say you drop Hallion, you drop kind of mentioning these phrases, you're gonna have to find another one, and it's more difficult to find a new one and then embed that into your content rather than just keep going with what you have there and what you've been working with. And if it fits your personal brand, which it does, your Hallion, then stick with it.
There we go, that's a tip. You're gonna be seeing and hearing a lot more, you fucking Hallions, yous.
Get up them stairs.
And you know what? Both of them came so organically. I didn't even purposely ever try to make either.
But they're the best ones. There's no point trying to force something. Like, maybe you could say I try and force all I could pass it by whacking it at the start of every clip. But it was something that I was saying before, where I'd walk into the house and someone would say hello and I'd be like, hola, hola, que pasa, and I just scream it. I stop saying it now because I'm sick of saying it, because I say it in every clip. But it's, it's something that just naturally I was saying anyway. So trying to force something, people will see when it's inauthentic and it's forced. So if it's more natural to you, stick with it.
Two catchphrases that I always say, never on Instagram or on podcasts. Well, actually, no, that's a fucking lie. I usually start every podcast, boom.
He said it.
Yeah. Well,
his challenge for today was not to say boom on the podcast, and he said it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't at the start. Wasn't at the start, though, laddie. Don't get annoyed at me. And I always say to clients, when they start last rep, uno mas. And like, it's funny because I'd say 80% of the people that I've said it to the first time, they're always like, what? What? And I'm like, one more. And they're like, oh, why'd you not say that? I did. It just in a different language. I would have thought uno mas would have been quite common.
I like it. Obviously, yeah. I like it. I speak Spanish.
Si. Si, señor. Hola, señor Fernandez. Estoy en el aeropuerto y no consigo encontrar mi pasaporte.
Wisht.
That's straight from the fucking leaving cert fucking.
Leaving cert oral, whatever it was.
Yeah, you have to repeat the fucking thing off the top of your head. Oh, it's ingrained in my brain. almost lost my voice there. So keeping up with the Hallion, okay? And to get up them stairs, keep the catchphrases, right? What are we getting rid of then, right? We have one thing that we're keeping in. What are we getting rid of from the Coach Pig marketing strategy?
What are we getting rid of? I'd have to look through your stuff, wouldn't I? Get rid of everything, retire, and move on.
Yeah. just stop coaching.
Just quit it all.
Yeah, I know.
What would you get rid of? I don't know. I'd have to have a think about that and see what you're doing and what you're not doing. We'll put me on the spot there.
I am putting you on the spot. That's why I'm happy that you've
recognized. You know I charge for this stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm moving on. Yeah, exactly. Oh, I only started this podcast just to get marketing advice. That's
yeah. Yeah. Is it working? No, probably not.
No. So one thing I wanted to touch on, because you're a man who has hands. Well, not hands of many pies, but
doing too many pies, some would say.
Yeah, doing a lot of stuff. You have a lot of, you wear a lot of hats. You train fucking whole load. Well, maybe you don't train as much as you wear, but you still train a good bit. You obviously Zoma, creative director. You run Coffee and Kavaras.
Yes.
And you tie it all in together and somehow have a girlfriend or a fiance as well in around all that. How does one match all these things together and find some sort of balance between it all?
You don't. You absolutely don't. I'm not gonna lie. Like, there's no like magic pill. It's just get up early and work late. Really, there's no secret to it. And I probably should have more balance. And that's where something has to give. And I was saying to you before this that my training over the last probably 4 to 6 weeks has really dropped off, because I just have other priorities, and between business and kind of personal things that I need to focus on at the minute, and training had to take a back seat. I was trying to, up the last couple of competitions, I was trying to balance everything, and look, you know yourself, trying to train for competition can get very intense, and the mental aspect and the psychological preparation aspect was where I was falling down, to the point where I was going to training, literally turning up at jiu-jitsu, doing it, going home, and then forgetting about jiu-jitsu until I turned up again, which when you're training for competition, is, you have to be reviewing what you're doing. You have to be thinking about tactics even, and thinking about techniques and where you're kind of weak and where, what you need to work on. And yeah, something has to give. So look, there is no balance. And if you asked Emma, she'd say that I am absolutely mental with all that I try to do. And then let's say we're coming towards the end of 2023 now. I'm very big on goals and having targets and having, say, 10-year, 5-year, 3-year, 1-year goals, and breaking that down into monthly and weekly goals and making sure that every day you're getting towards those, which is good in that it keeps you focused and all that. But then you look at your goals and you say, right, well, did I do something today to get towards that goal? And when you have goals in 10 or 15 different areas that are completely separate, it makes that tough. But it's just about every day trying to get 1% better, trying to get 1% closer to that end goal. You're never going to reach the end goal, that's the point. But having an ideal goal, that cringy phrase of, is it reach for the stars and you might still land on the moon or some shit like that. But it is kind of true in a way, but there's no balance to it. And I look at it as that I'm able to do it now because I'm relatively young and I have the energy and the space capacity to be able to do all this, that I don't want to be looking back when I'm 70 and saying I wish I'd done that. And that's why I kind of started the businesses and the brands, and that's why I try to do what I can instead of, like, some people are more suited to going in and working 9 to 5 and going home and switching off at the weekends, and it works for some people, it just doesn't work for me. I need something else to challenge me, and if that comes at the cost of having some sort of balance, then so be it. I way prefer being under a little bit of pressure, put myself under that pressure, than just kind of going through the motions in a way.
I think that's a bit of balance in a different way than just maybe people think about it. People think balance is like, right, no, it's a 50-50 thing, or it's all the same. But sometimes this cup's pouring into this cup, and then different stages of the year, it's pouring back into this cup, and there's a third cup that might come out of somewhere, and it gets 100% of the water, and there's no water in the other three cups. You know, different points of the year, different points of your life, you're going to have different priorities, and different things are going to get.
It does change all the time. Like, when I've essentially 3 businesses really, and then a personal brand that I'm trying to build, and jiu-jitsu and personal stuff, personal life kind of stuff too, that at certain times of the year other certain aspects of that get more focused than others, and it's just trying to be as consistent as possible that all of them are still moving, even if you're say 80% focused on one of those things, that the little bit of focus you're putting into the other aspects, that there's still just a little bit of progression there. Because it comes back to what we were saying earlier about just constant progression. Once there's constant progression, it's way more enjoyable and satisfying, I suppose, from a day-to-day basis, to keep you involved and keep you interested in what you're doing.
Absolutely. I think you're the same as me, as I have a heap of fucking things going on always at once, and I need I'm trying to narrow down what I'm doing so that I can kind of go a bit better.
You need to be focused. I wish I had just focused on one thing instead of setting up a load of things at the same time and then trying to push them. It would make way more sense to focus on one thing, build that up, then build the next thing. Like, I'm trying to build a couple of businesses now at the same time, which is very difficult, and already in my head I'm like, here's 3 businesses I could start next year, which is just crazy, and I probably will end up doing it. Like, it's just completely hypocritical, but it's that. I'm not going to say I have ADHD. That's very disrespectful to people who actually do have ADHD, but I have a complete scatterbrain. So I need that change of direction sometimes.
change of stimulus, you know, exactly. Change of maybe not so much environment, but what you're working on. I'm the same, and I think that's why I have so many different things going on, and I like jiu-jitsu as well because it's complete chaos and it's never the same. You know, I think that's part of the reason why probably a lot of that, those type of people like myself and yourself end up leaning towards it. But from Coffee and Kimura's as a brand, for people out there who are maybe starting their own brand, maybe in a completely different area, maybe they're starting out as a coach like me. I mean, we've spoken about marketing in general, but what would be three main things you would make sure that people consider whenever they are thinking about marketing either themselves as a personal brand or like as a brand similar to Coffee and Kimura?
Consistency, professionalism, and what'll be number three? Well, firstly, it's consistency. Consistency aspect of everything, of being consistent with it, pushing it consistently, but having a consistent kind of team and identity. I think that's where a lot of people fall down, is that they start some sort of a brand or a kind of business, or try to build their personal brand, and they'll do it for a little bit and then it just drops off, and suddenly they go from posting once a day to once a week to once a month, and then they just forget about it. And if you had just kept going for another, you never know, the next day could be the day that it take off, the next post could be the one that goes viral and takes off. It's consistency is like, it compounds, you know, like financial stock market things, that the best technique or method of investment is just a little bit consistently, and it'll compound over time. And it's the same thing with marketing, with business in general. It's just turning up and doing it every day and being consistent with it, and then having the professionalism. I suppose consistency is a part of professionalism, but then the professionalism of your image, of, what way would I phrase it, the professionalism aspect of how it comes across. If you're trying to, let's say you're trying to build yourself as a coach, as a strength and conditioning coach, but then you're getting involved in politics or something like that, like, yeah, everyone can have an opinion, but I think just sticking in your professional lane is going to be way more valuable to what you're trying to build, instead of people going, okay, he's building himself up here as a strength and conditioning coach, but he's getting distracted, and is he going to be distracted? If I work with him as a coach, is he going to start getting distracted and not paying attention to me and my goals and what I'm kind of paying him to help me with? So that kind of professionalism aspect. Then when it comes to a brand, it's just about, yeah, I suppose a lot of the professionalism aspect is just about not being overly controversial. Like, you could say about Elon or Craig Jones or whoever being controversial and ripping into people, maybe that's not professional in a certain aspect, but they have a professional side to them, both of those guys in particular too.
But like, Craig Jones was at one stage one of the best jiu-jitsu athletes. He still is one of the best jiu-jitsu athletes. He's always going to have that level of professionalism in terms of jiu-jitsu attached, because, you know, he's still good. He's been good, you know.
Yeah, so regardless of his shit talk, if he turns up at a UFC invitational event, he's probably going to win or get very close to beating someone who's some of the best in the world. So,
and it'll be entertaining as well. It won't be a fucking, like, you know, a bore fest.
Exactly.
You know.
Elon
has the businesses that he's owned, like, to back him up as well. So, like, maybe their manner isn't professional, but their evidence of the quality of their work is there.
Exactly. So yeah, that's the professionalism aspect of they're doing what they're there to do, really. Mm-hmm. Elon builds those businesses, Craig Jones building their gym, breaks ankles, and does what he has to do when he's on the mat. Yeah, might get several medals all the time, shout out to B team, but like, he still turns up and does it and competes and competes at a really high level all the time, regardless of what he does on camera or
off camera. We will venture into the last kind of wee sections here, just because I've been going for a wee while, and I have a few wee, not so much quick fire, but things to kind of
really put me on the spot now with this. Yeah.
No. We're not going to put you under any stress. Okay. First things first. If you had to make only one of the rash guard designs on Coffee and Kimura is available, what one, or only wear one for the rest of your life?
What would you wear one for the rest of my life? Probably the Americano range.
Yeah,
I love it. I just think it's such a slick design, and it's probably the most popular one that we've done so far, to the point where we released the, I always say we when I'm talking about Coffee and Kimura's, and it's literally just me. Like,
I do as well, talking about coaching.
Like, yeah, try to make it seem like a bigger brand. I've been doing that from the start, like, oh, we, yeah, me arse, like, it's literally just me. Until like a year and a half ago, it was me packing orders in the spare room of my house. Like, but anyway, yeah, the Americano range is a slick one, to the point where I did it again. I redesigned it. Basically just recolored it and released a flat white range, and in hopefully January, if not February, we'll have the matcha latte. I did it again, the matcha latte range, which is another variation of that, and it's a cool design. Looks really, really minimal and sleek, which is what I wanted to go after. A lot of with Coffee and Kimura's, it's a niche within a niche, and it can get very cringy with design very quickly, so I'm very cautious of the designs that are released, that I'll come up with a design and I'll sit on it for a little while before I even consider it again, because I don't want to go down that cringy over designed route. I want to keep it sleek and minimal and a bit more stylish as well, and that's kind of come through with the Americano and the flat white ranges, that they've been the most popular ones we've done so far, and it's so I'll say Americano range.
I have to say my favorite rash guard is the signature harp one.
The custom one
of a kind.
One of one.
You're not getting that.
Not for public release.
No, that'd be a B team bulls sort of a job where the copyright would end up coming in.
Say nothing.
You know what?
Say nothing.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Best coffee in Dundalk.
Oh, that's a good question. Great question.
We'd open up to the surrounding areas if there's somewhere that's not necessarily in the town.
I'm more thinking of who I'm going to offend by saying certain answers. I don't think I can pick one. There's too many.
Political answers, we don't appreciate it.
I have splinters in my arse here from sitting on this fence, but I'm going to say Panama. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Panama. I love Panama. I think it's not, well, yeah, if you're saying just coffee, the coffee is beautiful. I like the vibe in the place as well. Don't know, maybe that's
we're just talking about coffee. No, I don't care about any vibes.
All right, just coffee.
I do appreciate the vibe in Panama, but just coffee.
Maybe third place then.
Ooh, I do like third place.
I don't go to 23 Seats enough, but it is nice coffee as well. Macara has nice coffee. Max, shout out to Myers, has nice coffee as well. There's so much nice coffee in Dundalk. It's insane. There's like seven in the square, around the square alone. Like,
yeah, there's crazy. That new spot opened up. It's on the square as well.
Yeah,
can't think of the fucking name of it, but it's another one.
There's too many, but a lot of them are good. And to be honest, having more is better, because then they all have to up their game, and then 100%. Everyone wins.
Everybody wins. Everyone's a winner, babe. I am not going to make any selections on that one, but
get off. I know.
I am, as of today, going to choose 23 Seats. It may change next week. It does change very regularly where my favourite is.
I might go to 23 Seats for me morning coffee on Monday.
That's good. See, I also cannot separate the fact that I got probably the nicest pastel de nata that I've gotten in maybe a year out of there a couple of weeks ago, alongside a beautiful coffee. So
I thought we were just talking about coffee here.
Yeah, but see, I can't separate it in my head. But like the coffee, I remember, and it was good. So I'm going to settle with 23 Seats, take the pastel de nata out of it. But yeah, that's my pick, 23 Seats. We'll change it probably next time. Best feed in the dock. Now, it could be of evening, it could be of
a tammy.
Oh,
a tammy, hands down.
And what's the go-to order?
Go-to order in a tammy is Abbey Tempura Masago, Dragon Roll. And depending on if I'm eating in or eating at home, if I'm eating in a tammy, I'll get Tatsuda Chicken. It's top notch.
What's that?
It's kind of like a breaded kind of chicken in like a kind of a sauce. I don't really know what it is, but it's incredible. Really, really nice with steamed rice. And then Ebi Gyoza as well. Top tier.
Gyoza, so good.
I've been to a few sushi places in different parts of the world now. And there's very few that are like that much better than the Tammy. It's incredible to me that you go to, like, we went to one in Barcelona in particular. Massive sushi place, a really big restaurant, always booked out, and I don't know, there's hundreds of tables in the place. And as you were eating it, I was thinking to myself, it was the first time I'd eaten sushi anywhere other than a Tammy, and I was like, this isn't, like, it's lovely, yeah, 100%, don't get me wrong, it's beautiful. It's not all that much better than a Tammy. I was like, this is, Tammy's top notch here.
Mm-hmm. There you go, a Tammy for the win.
Yeah, give us some free meals, will you? I made a fortune buying lunch across the road.
It'd be handy, like, you're just over there now.
Oh, it's dangerous, so dangerous.
Favourite submission
changes by what I'm working on. The minute it's triangles, whacking everyone with triangles. I struggled with triangles for years because of these little stumpy legs, but for some reason they seem to be starting to click with me now. I'm a fan of a Darce choke
with them short arms.
Yeah, that's the point. Once they get wrapped up, you're not opening them up. Although I did nearly break my finger on my own bicep doing a Darce choke and Nogi at a competition earlier in the year. But anyway, Darce choke, yeah. I don't know what you call it. The choke from the back where you have one collar and then you grab the other collar and like extend it. I don't know what that's called. But
some sort of collar.
Yeah, I don't know. Some sort of collar choke from the back. Big fan of that at the minute as well. Arm bars, whack everyone with arm bars. Arm bar the life out of you. Yeah, I don't know. It changes depending on what I'm working on.
Your favourite role at Team Torres?
Favourite person to roll with, like?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say you now because you're sitting beside me.
Fuck
don't
off, don't say me. No, it's somebody
I
else.
I hate rolling with you. You're a nightmare. Yeah. Big man blue belt now.
Ah, big dog. Getting tapped by white belts every second session.
That's favourite role has put me on the spot. I don't know, I'll have to have a think about that one.
I tell you what, I'm not saying just because you're sitting here beside me, but we do have very good flow rolls at the start of open mat end up extremely accelerating extremely fast into 100% rolls, which is very, I do enjoy that.
Like every flow roll ever.
Yeah, it's like
no flow roll ever ended after 5 minutes still flowing.
No, like the first minute we're like, oh yeah, going through position is class, and then all of a sudden somebody gets a good position, and then
once there's a shoulder and a jaw, then that's game over for the flow roll from there,
like. And then it's like, right, let's go. Okay, so
yeah, I'm not going to name anyone from that one, but we do have a lot of really good, even white belts in Team Towers at the minute are phenomenal.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah, that beginners program is doing some magic.
Yeah, up the Team Towers. Favourite combat sport athlete at the moment?
Favourite combat sport athlete? Jake Paul.
Cut the camera.
Wow, game over there. No, favourite combat sport athlete?
I can't even lie, I'm fucking...
I'm going to say Tynan Dalbra. I'm obsessed with Tynan Dalbra at the minute. His jiu-jitsu is just on another level. I just think he's such a cool guy as well. Yeah, I don't know, I'm trying to model my game on him a little bit at the minute, and yeah, big fan of how he does what he does, and just watching him is always a pleasure. He's just so seamless to watch. His technique is spotless, and yeah, he just dominates everyone consistently all the time. Very, very impressive.
Lovely. There's four fights that are happening next Saturday that are very exciting, and we'll discuss who do we think is going to win. Right,
okay.
Sean Strickland. Oh wait, no, that's not happening. I confused myself here with this one. Who do you think would win in the fight? Now, if you don't understand the background of this and you don't know who Ian Garry is, you need to go and look up who Ian Garry is, but there's a lot of fucking controversy about
look up the recent story about him
himself and his woman, but who do you think would win in a fight between Ian Garry and Sean Strickland?
I think Ian Garry should win. He should beat him. But I think Sean Strickland would just be, he's a hellion. He is the definition of a hellion. I just think it's going to be very hard to break him. I'll go Sean Strickland.
Okay.
I think he'd. I don't think he'd stop him. I think he'd just wear Gary down and beat him on decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah, same as that. Now, this is the actual fight that's going to happen next week. You've obviously heard that Tony Ferguson is being trained by who's going to carry
aliens.
Boats. By
aliens. Oh, is he? Yeah.
Yeah, did you not know that?
No, I didn't know that, no.
He's being trained by David Goggins. Now, you can say what you want about David Goggins, whether you like him, you love him, whatever. I'm just going to full on admit that I'm not his biggest fan. Like, I do like some of his stuff, and like, you know.
He's all right in small doses.
Yeah.
He's very full on.
And I would be very questioning of the fact that a high level MMA fighter is going to somebody like that to train. So from a training strength and conditioning perspective, I'm like, don't know what you're at, Tony. Fitness was never an issue with you anyway. So
especially when he's fighting someone like Paddy Pimblett, whose fitness probably isn't the best.
Yeah, it's more like a fighting thing. Yeah. You need to focus on that. Anyway, separate that. Paddy Pimblett versus Tony Ferguson. Who are you giving it to?
I think Tony's done, to be honest. I think he's I think he's passed it, and I know there was a lot of controversy about this matchup. I was a bit surprised when I saw it myself, but it probably is a little bit of the UFC trying to build Paddy a bit. Not that I don't think he could be built much more. I think anyone that's in, anyone who knows who Tony is knows who Paddy is, but I do think that Paddy will probably stop him.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he'll stop in the second round.
I'm going to throw a curveball out here. I'm going to say Tony Ferguson's going to take it home.
Do you think so, yeah?
I'm going to throw it out there.
Will there be a submission? No, I don't think so.
No, I don't see a submission. Yeah. I don't see a submission. I'd love to see... Paddy
Pimble head kick at 3:57 of the second round.
Yeah.
There you go. That's my shout.
Okay, fair. Right. Well, Ian Garry already mentioned me. He's actually fighting Vicente Luque next Saturday. You think you'll beat him?
Yeah.
I think that one's a bit more of a...
Luke is good. It's a solid matchup, but I just think Gary's a couple of levels above him.
Yeah. Leon Edwards and Colby, that's the main event next Saturday, and that's probably the one that I'm excited for Paddy and Tony, but Leon and Colby I'm more excited for, because I really like Leon Edwards, and I think the fucking UFC give him a bad deal. Like
he's
just with anybody.
A raw deal, yeah.
Anybody that doesn't fit into their style of marketing, or if they're not Conor McGregor or American, they do their best to fucking hinder them. When's the last time Leon even fought? It's been fucking ages.
That's a serious matchup. That fight is that could literally go either way. I will get off the fence, but I think that's going to be very close, and it probably will go five rounds. Who am I going to say? Oh, I'm going to say Leon, just because I prefer him as a person.
I think I'm going Leon. I'm not super confident, because Colby the way he fights, he can fucking drag him into his own game if that works.
That's where Leon needs to. If he gets sucked into Colby's game, then he's fucked.
Yeah.
But if he can stick on the outside and just keep piecing them up a wee bit,
or
for five rounds,
or another bang headshot,
49-46 with a bang headshot, 4:52 of fifth round.
Oh, there you go, put your money on it. That is it. Thank you very much for joining me, Mr. Chris. I know we didn't get half through the notes that I have there, so I guess we're gonna have to burn the area off each other another time.
Part two coming soon.
Yeah, since we spoke about jiu-jitsu and training for most of that anyway.
That's probably what part two is gonna be as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, fuckers, for listening. Go follow Christopher. If you're at the Jiu-Jitsu Crack and you don't have any coffee and Kimura rash guards, there's something wrong with you. And it's even more so if you enjoy the caffeination. Get on board.
There's decaf ranges coming next year.
There you go.
2024.